Bibles, if you will, to the book of Genesis, Genesis 41. We're going to continue where we were Sunday morning. We've been talking about, we kind of bounced away from it for a few weeks, and we roll back in Sunday morning talking about Joseph and the example of Joseph for us. Joseph was a type of Christ. I believe Joseph was also a type of who we should be and how we should walk in the earth. The Lord really had me spin off of that. And of course, we were talking about the love and the goodness of the Father. If you weren't here Sunday morning, you really need to listen to that word. It was just a good day in the house. Just His presence was overwhelming. But I feel like an important word for us in the way that we view ourselves. Tonight I want to come in and I really want to develop looking at Joseph and what I feel like was one of his keys to success was Joseph's lack of offense. I believe that one of the biggest things that paralyzes individuals in their life is offense. Is we become offended at people, we become offended at people groups, we become offended at ourselves. And we can't, we allow, that opens the door for shame and guilt, to just heap upon us. And then I think we become offended at God. And when we become offended, at individuals or people groups or circumstances or any of these things, it really opens up the door for a victim mentality to be established in our life. And when we come in and we allow a victim mentality to become established in our life, then it skews our perspective of things. We begin to view people from the wrong perspective, and we're going to talk about that a good bit tonight. But we begin to view people from the wrong perspective. We feel like that everybody is just like the one that wounded me. We feel like everybody's out to get me. And we start honing in and looking for offense. And I promise you, if you look for offense, you will be offended. It is not hard to find. And we live in a culture that has really created this atmosphere where everybody's looking for offense. I think one out of three billboards or a lawyer advertising, have you been hurt, injured, or mistreated? So we can sue somebody. You know, they're getting rich off of it. But what it does is it permeates this mindset that, man, I have been offended and my rights have been done wrong and it's the reason I am today. And it becomes our offense, it becomes our escape, or it becomes our reason of why we're not living in the fullness that God created us to live in. You know, you look at we've got a skewed definition of sin. You know, we think sin is are committing all of these acts, and sin is the definition of sin is not committing certain acts that we deem as wrong or bad and all of that stuff. Sin is man, you want to get right down to it. Sin is missing the mark, and when we miss the mark, it separates us from God. When we miss the mark, it keeps us from becoming what God designed us to be. And I heard Brother Damon say something recently in some teaching. I think it might have been the Wilderness Society. And he was talking about we can be on proper. Usually when we think about missing the mark, Adam, we think that I'm off to the left or right or high or low and I missed the mark. I'm not lined up properly. He said you can be lined up perfectly, but he said you can come short of the mark and that's still missing the mark. And I think that's where a lot of Christians fall into, and something I've really, me and Lord have really purposed in our hearts not to do in our life is to be lined up properly but come short of the mark. Ain't nothing worse, man, than shooting in that arrow going straight to the bullseye, but it runs out of speed, it runs out of momentum, and it falls short. And, you know, I don't want that to be my life because that's missing the mark. And a lot of Christians, man, they pin their life on the do's and don'ts, and they don't put any weight on missing the mark. I promise you something, offense will cause you to miss the mark. It'll cause you to come short because it will paralyze you. It will sap you of your strength. It will sap you of your energy. and a spiritual energy. And so I really want us to hone in and talk about Joseph's lack of offense and really examine our lives and see, are we being offended? Are we guarding our heart from offense? So let's dive in. One thing that I talked about Joseph, just real quickly bringing everybody back up to speed on Joseph. Joseph was Jacob's son. He was one of his 12 sons. He was the firstborn of Rachel. Rachel was the love of his life. Rachel was the man, that was everything that he was going for in life, was Rachel. And so that was the real desire of his heart, was Rachel. And there for a while, her and Leah were in this contest. Her sister, which he was married to both of them. We won't even go down that road, but that's a long, twisted story. And, you know, he was married to both of them, and Leah was producing all these kids and these sons, and Rachel couldn't produce any. And so Rachel started letting him have her handmaiden, and he produced a couple sons out of her handmaiden. Leah says, well, shoot, she's going to do that. I'm going to let her have my handmaid. That's how I wound up with 12 sons, guys. You know, you get two wives and two handmaids, it ain't hard to have 12 sons. And so he's, you know, having all of these children. But his favorite of his 12 sons were Joseph and Benjamin, because that's the two sons of Rachel. And everybody says, man, it ain't right to have a favorite and all that stuff. There are things that you will produce in your life that can be very good, but if it is not produced out of God's best for your life, it will never stir passion in you. But when you are flowing and you are reproducing out of God's best in your life, which is what Rachel represented, he was good to all his sons. He loved all his sons. But the ones out of Rachel are special. And when you find that sweet spot in kingdom life, and listen to me, guys, this is real important. When you find that sweet spot in kingdom life, it will produce things and it will birth things that will stir you in here. It won't stir you in your senses like it will stir you in the depth. When I am producing things out of Rachel, out of God's best for my life, it makes me come alive in here. It feels good. It feels right. And I can do a lot of good stuff in other things and produce a lot of good things. You know, as we said Sunday, there were some good things that came out of Leah's sons and all of that stuff. And I'm not throwing them under the bus. But we settled for less than God's best for our life. And so we see Joseph was a product of Rachel. In that, Joseph was his favorite. Jacob made him a coat of many colors, or had it made, and he wore this. He had a special place in God as well. He dreamed dreams. He had prophetic dreams, and he shared them with his brothers, and sometimes that doesn't go over real well. When you talk about what God's speaking to you and what God's saying and what God's doing in your life, it's not always well received. But that doesn't mean that you don't embrace it, guys. You're not always going to be well received by everybody. Jesus wasn't. The prophets weren't. The apostles weren't. And if you are living an extraordinary life, you won't. You know, what we need to do is quit trying to shrink in with the crowd just so we feel like everybody will accept us and all of that. And everybody will just be, you know, loved and embraced by all. It ain't going to happen, man. When you're doing what God's called you, it is not going to happen. So what you've got to do is you've got to dial in with you and God, and you've got to chase after that and kind of let the chips fall where they may. I'm sorry, but that's what you got to do. And so Joseph comes in and he shares the dreams with his brothers. His brothers are jealous because he's his dad's favorite already. And then he starts sharing these dreams with him and all of that. And so they sell him into slavery. Some of them were wanting to kill him. And I think it might have been Reuben said, man, let's don't kill him. We don't want his blood on our hands. We'll just sell him into slavery. And so a caravan came by, and they sold him into slavery, and he made his way into Egypt. Joseph spent 13 years in prison in Egypt, in servitude, I should say. Some of it he was in Potiphar's house. And the cool thing about Joseph is everywhere he went and everything he did, he found favor. Because he was excellent everywhere he went and everything he did. He carried himself like a covenant man because he knew he was a covenant man. He knew who he was in Christ, and so he carried himself differently. And so everywhere he did, man, don't think you've got to wait. When I arrive, that's when I'm going to flourish. You flourish where you're at. Because if you don't flourish where you're at, you never will arrive. If you're not faithful in the little things, If you're not faithful in the hidden things, if you're not faithful in the things that aren't seen by everyone, but when you begin to be faithful in all those, then you'll get promotions from God. And I want my life to be such that it's faithful in every aspect and every step, and then God will promote that. And so Joseph did this, and he spent time in servitude, 13 years. That's a long time before he had this meeting in Genesis 41 that we're about to talk about. One thing that happened that I want to come in and talk about as far as the opportunity for offense was when he was in Potiphar's house and he was excelling in every area. And I believe his countenance was good. I believe he had a goodly countenance because I believe he was in right relationship with God. And Potiphar's wife tried to put the move on him. And he's like, You're married, and I ain't that guy. And so he fled the room. And when he fled the room, she grabbed his garment, and she ripped his outer garment off, and his coat, if you will. And then when her husband, she was jilted, so when her husband came back in, she said, "This Hebrew that you brought into our home tried to rape me. And here's his coat, and I fought him off," and all of this stuff. And so they took, who are they going to believe? They going to believe Potiphar, or they going to believe a Hebrew servant? They going to believe Potiphar. So Joseph got cast into prison. And he spent these years in prison before this opportunity. We won't even get into all the story that caused him to get out of prison, but he was able to interpret dreams, and he interpreted a couple dreams for two of Pharaoh, which was the king, two of Pharaoh's chief servants, the butler or the cupbearer and the chief baker. And he accurately interpreted these dreams. And so then you go on, and it was a couple years later, then Pharaoh had some dreams, and nobody could interpret them. And so the cupbearer, the butler, he said, "Man, I remember when I was in prison, when I fell out of favor with you, and I was in prison, I had these dreams, and there's a Hebrew servant in there, man, and he knows, he can interpret dreams." And so that's where we are, giving you a little backstory in Genesis 41:14. And I want to read a couple verses, and then I want us to talk about Joseph and guarding his heart from offense. Joseph had the opportunity, and rightfully so, he had the opportunity to be offended by three different groups of people or people. He could have easily been offended at the Egyptians. I mean, you get wrongly accused and cast into prison. You go on vacation down into the Caribbean or Central America or something like that. Let's say you go into Costa Rica on vacation, and you're down in Costa Rica, and you get falsely accused of something, and you get imprisoned and all of that. You know what you're going to do? You're going to say, "Man, them Costa Ricans, man, I do not like them." And you'll be offended at them, and so you'll get this stigma against those Costa Ricans. I got something in the mail the day. We were in Italy in September, and it was, I had a wonderful trip and all that, and spent a couple weeks over there. But I got something. I ain't even told you, Randy. I got something in the mail. Came certified mail to me the other day. And you know what it was? It was a doggone traffic citation from Italy all the way back in September. It wasn't speeding. I know y'all, first thing y'all think, Sid was speeding. I don't speed over there. I mean, them jokers drive way faster than I do. But it was some stupid something about I had either driven through or parked in a pedestrian something that I did not have authorization to park in, and they got it off the tag of the rental car. Randy drove some, so I'm going to throw it on Randy, but I got to pay the how many euros it is, 99 euros. I mean, I'm like, you know, the first thing I told Lori, and I was kidding, was because we loved it, we can't wait to go back, but I told Lori, I said, "Them dang Italians, I ain't never going back. Man, they going to falsely accuse me and rob my money and all that stuff. You see if I ever go back to Italy." That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about, and that's a silly little illustration. That's a true story, but it's kind of a silly illustration. But if we're not careful, we'll come in. And Joseph had a real opportunity to be offended at the Egyptians. The thing about the Egyptians is they felt like the Hebrews were an unclean and a lesser people. They said that Joseph told his brothers this later on. He said these, even after he was in charge, he said that these Egyptians won't eat with us because they think we're unclean. And he was the number two guy in the land, and they still wouldn't eat at the table with him because they felt like they were inferior. They said it was an abomination for the Egyptians to even eat with the Hebrews. And so that would, number one, that would set you at a place to where you're like, Man, these jokers think they're better than me. I'm offended at them. He was falsely cast into prison. He spent all these years in prison. Another good reason for him to be offended at them. And what we will do is we will come in and we've got a real big problem in our country. And I think it's everywhere. I don't think it's just in our country. We've got a real big problem is we get offended with people groups. I want you to look at Joseph, and let me read just a few verses right here. Let's read verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. And then Pharaoh said unto Joseph in verse 15, I've dreamed a dream, and there's none that can interpret it. I have heard it say of thee that thou can understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me, but God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Does that sound like a man that's offended at a people group? He didn't come out of prison, and I don't think his countenance was bad. I didn't think he was like, man, he shaved himself. He changed his raiment and all of this. And he comes before him, and he's like, man, he said, it's not me, but it's God, and God's going to give you an answer of peace. He's saying God's going to speak blessings into this situation right here. Later on, it comes in verse 40. Let me back up to verse 37. And when he told him the interpretation, it says, and the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. When he told him the interpretation of the dream and what he should do. Not only did he give him the interpretation, he gave him a strategy. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? This is a pagan king saying this. A man in whom the Spirit of God is. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according to thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And then we come in, and he puts the ring on his finger and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, put a gold chain around his neck, gave him the number 2 chariot to ride. I mean, he did all of this stuff for him. That is not going to be done for and to a man that is carrying an attitude of offense. And I'll be honest with you, when we walk around with offense, it reeks. It reeks. You when you get around with somebody that's offended, their posture's different. They're not walking in a place of peace. They're always on edge slightly. Come on. I'm serious. The offense, it carries all of these things. And Joseph had, according to our standards today, every right to be offended at the Egyptians. But he didn't come in here and he didn't portray that. He didn't have that. He guarded his heart against it. It would have been real easy to say every Egyptian's just like Potiphar and his wife. And what we'll do is we'll come in and we'll get wounded. Legitimately so, we'll get wounded by somebody, and so what we will do is we will allow that to turn into an offense. And then that offense will cause us to put a stigma on an entire people group that one person represents. And it happens with all races in our country. You know what the end result of this is? Bitterness. Offense is the early stages of bitterness. That's why you've got to guard your heart more than anything. I believe there are people that die premature deaths because they have allowed bitterness to eat them up like a cancer. I believe that. I believe that people age prematurely. I believe their health goes downhill. I believe if you'll guard yourself from offense and therefore give no place to bitterness in your life, I believe it will be well for you and your health of your life. I'm for real. Me and Lori had, and this sounds like bragging a little bit, but it's not. It's just, I'm just speaking truth and what's going on with him and all that stuff. Lately, me and Lori have had an unusual amount of people that we run into that we hadn't seen in a while, and they will come up to us and they're like, man, y'all look great. And some of them will be strangers. Some of them will be people that we've known, and maybe we hadn't seen them in a few years, or 6 months, or something like that. And we have had that happen multiple times lately. People come up to say, "Man, y'all just look great. Y'all do not look like y'all were." You know, I'm 57, and Lori's around 50, and people come up and they'll say that. There's no way y'all got grandkids and all of this stuff. Say, "Yeah, man, for real, we do," and all that stuff. And you know, and they're like, "Man, you look like you." And I'm like, "I don't look like I've been in the gym." You know, I've lost all my muscle tone up here and all that. I need to try to start getting some of it back and all. But you know what I told them? I always tell them, and especially like we had a young lady the other night over at Atlanta, and we were talking to her, and she was just kept on and on about how great. I said, "You know what it is?" I said, "It's the peace of the Lord. It's the peace of the Lord. It's not our diet, because we don't eat healthy. We like to eat good food, and that means a lot of garlic, and that means a lot of butter and stuff like that. Usually it's cooked in wine and everything else. So we're not out here doing this healthy diet or anything. You know? I'm serious. But we flat out, we're like, you know what it is? It's the peace of the Lord. It's resting in Him. It's giving no place to offense. I don't have time for offense. I see the effects of it, and I got too much I want to do. And I'm not going to let it hamstring me. I'm not. I'm too busy to get offended. I really am. I'm too busy to get offended. And I think a lot of us, we come in and we allow the offense to start taking hold, and then what it turns into is it turns into bitterness. And I don't see any of this in Joseph. And I want to tell you something, guys. After 13 years of being in servitude, that's plenty of time for offense to turn into bitterness. Not only does it paralyze us in trying to minister to people, it destroys our peace, our joy, our love for life and what's going on around us. We can't celebrate with anybody else because we're a victim. You ever notice a victim has a hard time celebrating with anybody else? They have a hard time celebrating with anybody else because they say, "That should be me," and it's not. Because I got something took from me. Don't ever let the enemy come in and put a victim label on you. You might be a victim in a circumstance and something going on, but don't let it define you. Come on. Don't let it define you. And so I want to spend just a few minutes talking about the power of offense toward people groups. And I brushed on it just a little bit Sunday morning. But if we're not careful, it'll totally skew our perspective of people. Obviously, in the South, we look at the black-white thing. And I promise you, I know as many prejudiced black people as I know prejudiced white people. And I've experienced prejudice on both ways. But we come in and we have something that happened to somebody, us or somebody we know, from a person of another ethnic group. And so then we label them. We say all of them are bad. And if you're an African-American in the South, you come in and you're like, "Man, the white man's always just trying to keep me down because of the history." And I'm not trying to argue with the history. There's a legitimacy to the history. But the worst thing that we can do, any of us, is come in and allow that to define us and cause us to where we're in a place to where we can't freely flow with somebody from another ethnic group. It's as bad with the Hispanic now as it is with the black-white issue. We'll come in and we'll look and we'll be like, you know, "Man, all these doggone Hispanics, they coming in and just, you know, ruining our country and all of this stuff and everything." And I'll be honest with you, I probably have as much crime, and if I lived in El Paso, I might be singing a little bit different tune, but I have as much crime on Rockmart Road from redneck white boys than I do Hispanics or African Americans. All these guys that want to steal your four-wheelers and all that stuff. And for me to come in and judge you because I had a bad experience with somebody, or somebody told me I'm supposed to. See, that's the problem I have right now, is people tell us we're supposed to not like each other. Because all this race, you know, racism in America, racism is America, racism in America. And they're telling you, they're telling our kids that if you're African-American, you're not supposed to like white people. And if you're white, you're not supposed to trust African-Americans. And none of us are supposed to like the Latinos because every one of them's an illegal alien. We ain't got to the Muslims yet. We just hitting those three ethnic groups. Am I speaking truth on this? And we'll come in, and what we do is we will view them from a very negative, wrong perspective. And they can do it too. We can go to the Central American countries, and we can, whether it's El Salvador or Honduras or Guatemala or wherever, and we can do mission work down there. And there are some in those countries, you know what they'll do? They'll look at us like we're just rich Americans. And there's some, a lot, that'll look at us like we're kingdom people. So it works on that end also. And so I really want us to guard ourselves, because Joseph had the perfect opportunity to do this, and he didn't. And I want us to guard ourselves, because what it'll do is it'll rob me of my ability to allow God to connect me with anybody that doesn't look just like me. That's why our churches are the way they are. I think church is one of the most segregated places in America. Because we all want to be around people that look like us and talk like us and act like us and vote like us. I'll be honest with you guys, man. I'm good on ethnic group, man. I am good. I'm really good on that. I've got a good heart on that. But where I struggle with is offense with the liberals. I do. I really struggle with that because they don't think like me, and I'm right and they're wrong. I mean, that's our thinking, right? And so if I'm not careful, if you vote Democrat, I got some relatives that are, man, they're good Christian folks, but they are diehard Democrats. I really don't get it. I'm like, man, I just don't understand. But they're good folks. I'm going to be careful. I ain't saying nothing about any calibers or nothing tonight, so we're going to be clean tonight. Jeffrey says, thank you. But it's not just with a person's race. Until we begin to walk where they are, or we begin to see where they're coming from, then our perspective is usually skewed. Most of us that have such a negative opinion of the Latinos that are flooding, the caravans that are flooding into our country, and we say, much my health insurance goes up. Does mine too. And I don't like that. And I'm not saying open borders are the answer. But if I've got a family of four and I'm making $15 a day, I'm probably trying to get to America too. I get it. I get it, brother. I see it. I can't feed my family. I'm going to do whatever. And when we start seeing the perspective that other people are coming from, then it'll change our heart in that sense. Doesn't necessarily change what's right and what's wrong and all that, but it'll change our offense and our prejudice on it. We could. I talked a little bit Sunday morning about the people of other faith with the Muslims. Do you feel the same way when a mosque gets blown up in Christchurch, New Zealand, that you do when a Baptist church gets blown up in South Carolina or shot up in South Carolina? We think it's terrible if it happens at a Baptist church in South Carolina. But when it happens at a mosque, then we're kind of like, I promise you, God doesn't feel that way. I promise you. And when we come in and we're offended at, after 9/11, we fly a good bit, and we were on a flight not just right after 9/11, but wasn't anybody on it. But you know, in the coming flights and the months after that, every time I saw a person that even looked like they might be Muslim, I was sitting there figuring out how I was going to kill them with an ink pen. Because I'm like, man, I know they're going to hijack his plane. I'm going to have to kill them with an ink pen. And where is it in the throat? I'm supposed to stab them to get that. You know, just keep stabbing and I finally hit it. Is that it? What you know what I'm doing? I'm paralyzing myself with the number one, not just to being able to release Christ into them, but to be able to just represent the love of a loving God. Because immediately I'm like, I don't like that person because they don't believe like I believe. And you say, well, brother, that's pretty extreme right there. You know what we do? We trended on down to people in the Christian faith that are not the same denominations as us. Because we'll come in and we'll say, well, they're not as deep as I am. They're not chasing after this. They're not going as hard as I am. And, man, God really got up in my stuff. I'm talking about offense because we get offended because they don't latch on to what we latch on to. They don't come to our church because we know we're the deepest and we got the best word and we got the best worship. We don't know why everybody doesn't come here, right? It will. I shared with y'all, and I totally agree, Jeffrey. I shared with y'all, and first thing we have to do is we have to admit guilt in the fact that it creeps into our perspective and our mindset if we're not careful, don't we? I mean, we do, and it wasn't just when I got Pentecostal. When I was Baptist, I kind of had the same thing, you know. But when we were down in Honduras recently ministering, and I've been on this quest for the last several years. With a bunch of you guys on how deep can we go with God? How deep can we go? How deep can we go in revelation? How deep can we go in understanding? How deep can we go in word? And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But we've got this, you know, this quest for, man, I want to keep ascending and go deeper and higher and all of this, you know, this life of me and God and man, and we're just like, you know, this going on and everything. And then I go down there to Honduras, and there were three different missionary groups that we were around for a week. All these guys were worried about was serving people and loving people. They didn't know who Bethel Worship was, and they didn't know who Hillsong, I mean, I'm sure they've heard of Hillsong Worship, but they didn't know who Elevation Worship was, and they didn't listen to Stephen Furtick, and they didn't listen to Bill Johnson. Don't even know if they knew who Bill Johnson was. And I'm like, let me present the gospel to you. All these folks did was want to love people and serve people and show them the gospel the way James shows the gospel. And God flat out asked me a question. He said, which one's deeper, you or them? And I was like, wow. He said, which one's more pure? And I'm like, wow, okay. It didn't stop the fact that I want to keep going deep with God, but me going deep with God should produce something. That's the thing. I'm still on a pursuit of trying to go as deep with God as I can get, but if it doesn't produce anything, then all it is noise. And when we become offended at people groups, when we become offended at stuff that has happened in our life, when we become victims, when we become bitter because of this stuff, then it blocks every one of these avenues in our life. Every one of them. And so I want us to guard our heart on that. Man, we've got to guard our heart on that. Anybody got any comments on that? Y'all good? All right. Let's move on. Y'all quiet bunch tonight. Man, I need some rowdy folks. It's like, man, I got, give me that mic. All right, let's bounce on to the next one. We're going to go over to chapter 43. Everybody bounce over to Genesis 43. We're going to get away from people groups, and we're going to get with individuals. I'm going to read verses 30 through 34, and I could really lay out about two chapters right here. what happened in this was Joseph interpreted the dream that there was going to be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. And Pharaoh exalted him to the number two guy in Egypt. I mean, to the point where he said, only in my throne am I going to be greater than you. And he said, nothing's going to happen in this land unless you authorize it. Everything goes through you. That's supposed to be our place of dominion here on earth. Just throwing that out there for you guys. You want to say, what kind of bar am I supposed to, you know? It's like cancer has no place unless you come in agreement with it. That's where we're supposed to be. It's where we're supposed to operate in. Premature death has no place unless you come in agreement with it. And he told, the king told Joseph, he said, nothing's going to happen in this country unless it goes through you. And we're supposed to be in such a place of authority, such a place of sonship on this planet Earth, that's the way it's supposed to be with us, guys. So there's your bar to aspire to. And so Joseph is basically, he's running the country. And you can imagine, because they were prepared for the 7 years of bounty, of the 7 years of plenty, knowing that 7 years of famine were going to come up. I mean, they were like the ultimate speculators. They came in and they stored up all this grain. They stored up all of this produce. They stored up all this livestock. I mean, everything was just sitting there on go, man, in these 7 years of plenty. They were stockpiling. And then the 7 years of famine hit. And so now all of a sudden, all of these surrounding countries were in famine and didn't have. And so where did they come to buy? Egypt. So they were already the wealthiest nation on the planet, and now they were sitting on the most resources in the planet, and everybody had to come to them to get it. So that made them even wealthier, even stronger, even more powerful and all of this. So Joseph's sitting there, and he's basically the comptroller, and everything runs through him. And so his brothers come in from Canaan. His father sends his brothers to come in from Canaan and to buy grain, to buy corn, to buy wheat, so that they can survive this famine. And long story short, man, there are two or three things that happened, you know, where he came in and he sold them some, and he arranged it where they would have to bring his youngest brother back, Benjamin, and all of that. And so he does this, and it goes back and forth. Simeon has to stay for a while, and he sells them some stuff, but they have to come back because he puts the money back in the sack and all of this. And here's the bottom line on this, guys. Joseph's brothers, when he was a teenage boy, sold him into slavery. Now, some of you guys have probably had a raw deal. I've had a few raw deals in life. A lot of you guys have had some raw deals in life where people have hurt you, individuals have hurt you, family members have hurt you. I've had some people try to arrest me before and some stuff like that. I ain't never had nobody that had the power and ability to sell me into slavery. Imagine that. Adam, you imagine being 13 years old and TW sells you into slavery. Sometimes it's like, man, growing up in our household. And then telling your mom and daddy, said, well, Adam got killed by a wild beast and bring back a bloody coat. So, man, I'm sorry. Let's go through the mourning process. Knowing what they put your family through, your parents through, and the fact that they sold you into slavery. Anybody have a grudge? I think so. Have a right to be offended? Have a right to be a victim? Especially after you spent 13 years in servitude. I'm sitting here rotting in jail. And I'm my father's favorite. And I know I'm God's favorite too. Everybody else just doesn't know it yet. And he's sitting here, and his brothers keep coming back, and he has got the power, he has got the leverage, he's got the authority to do anything to them he wants to. How would you respond? By golly, they're going to pay, ain't they? See, that's where bitterness creeps in. Here's what's bad. We look at that, and that's an extreme thing. We'll be offended by somebody by what they did. Maybe it's legitimate that they did us wrong, but we'll let something minor in church cause us to get out of God's house. Or if I'm in God's house, I don't like the person sitting on the other side. That's the reason I sit over here, because they sit over there. And we'll come to church, but we'll grit our teeth, and we really don't like each other. Come on. We've all seen it, and some of us have been that person. Hopefully you're over it now. God delivered you from it. But it's true, isn't it? We get offended, and it eats us up because we got wronged. Ain't nobody denying he got done wrong. He knew he got done wrong. But I want you to look at his response right here. They came in and they brought Benjamin, his only full brother, with him on this last trip up. In verse 29 it says, "And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, Is this your younger brother of whom you spake unto me?" He's still carrying on the charade. And he said, "God be gracious unto thee, my son." And it says, "And Joseph made haste, for his bowels did yearn upon his brother, and he sought where to weep, and he entered into his chamber, and he wept there. He was so overwhelmed by seeing his brothers, especially his younger brother." See, the first time he saw all of them, Benjamin didn't sell him into slavery. The others did, but even the first time he saw them, the word said that he wept. He wept. So he had to flee the room, went into his private chambers, and he wept there. And then he washed his face, went out, and refrained himself, and said, "Set on bread." And then they come in, and they set on for him by himself, and for them by themselves, and for the Egyptians which did eat with him, but by themselves, because the Egyptians might not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination unto the Egyptians. And they set before him the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men marveled one at another. They marveled at how gracious he was to them. They marveled at how this man, so they still didn't know it was his brother. They just thought it was this Egyptian guy. And they're like, "My gosh, this guy's treating us great." Doesn't sound like somebody that holds a grudge, right? And he took and sent messes unto them from before him. But Benjamin's mess was five times so much as any of theirs, and they drank and were merry with him. When you become so offended with an individual that it comes into bitterness, you think that if I hold a grudge against them, then I'm going to get them back somehow. You know who's got the cancer? You do. It ain't eating them up. There are always going to be people that are going to be offended against you if you are doing anything in life. You just wait, Adam. If you get elected into this public office, woo-hoo, son, it's going to be worse than being a pastor on people that will be offended with you. But it doesn't affect you. And I've got people that are offended me right now. People offended at me, maybe because I did or didn't do something as a pastor, did or didn't do something as a boss or a business owner, because I've been a boss for, 30-something years. So there are people that are offended with me on that, and they think by holding on to that offense, which has crept into bitterness in their life, that somehow that's causing, putting some place of pain and misery on my life. It don't bother me. You're the loser in this, guys. When you're offended with somebody because of something they did, and maybe they did you wrong, but dude, you got to let it go and get over it and let God heal it and let God be your defender. And if God wants to come in and God wants to deal with them on that, then let God do it. But don't let it rob you of your joy. Don't let it rob you of your peace. You keep being you with the Lord. And if you are offended at somebody, I implore you to get to a place of forgiveness to that person and bring it to the Lord and say, "God, this is eating me up, and I don't want it to eat me up. I don't want it to affect my health. I don't want it to affect my sleep. I don't want it to affect my joy." It'll affect your ability to come in here into this house and freely worship. And it will skew the way you view other people. Because what you will do is you'll come in and you will become cynical. And you'll say, that person abandoned me, so everybody's going to abandon me. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to let anybody else get close to me. I've seen it with relationships, in dating relationships and marriage relationships. People go through a painful divorce, so you know what? All of a sudden, it's like, man, I ain't going. And so they'll shut themselves off emotionally, and they won't allow anybody else to get close. They won't allow anybody else to get close. And you're the loser when you do that. And Joseph had this capacity to come in because he did not let offense stick. He had the capacity to come in, and when he saw his brothers, he saw genuine joy. When we talk about being offended with God, if we have time in a few minutes, Joseph came in and his brothers were like, dude, man, we sold you into slavery. And he's like, man, don't worry about it. He said, God's the one that sent me down here to preserve life. He said, he sent me down here ahead of you guys to preserve life. That shows me that he was at such a place. He didn't even come in and say, man, I'm a better man than y'all because I forgave you. So that puts me in a place of superiority. He's like, man, God's taking care of me. God arranged all of this. I'm a covenant man. And if you're a covenant man, if you're a covenant woman, if you are married, God has married himself to your life and all of that stuff and all of that, then if people do you wrong, he'll repay you. Isaiah 61, I'm pretty sure he says he's going to give us double for our trouble. Right? Doesn't he? Some of my Isaiah 61, 62, that's me. I'm claiming that's my scripture. Y'all can tag on to it if you want to, but God wrote that for me. Me and Lori's got this. Me and Chris Bridges got in on it the other night on this big debate on whose God's favorite was. And I'm like, dude, all y'all, everybody else is just battling for second place on that because I know I'm it. And I hope you feel the same way. Chris said, no, man, I am. You know, I got offended. I'm just kidding. I said, well, you and Lori can fight for number two because I know I'm number one. And when we understand that and we're in that place and that's where Joseph was, then offense can't stick. Offense can't stick. Here's an opportunity that some of you guys are going to face. And I use the word opportunity on purpose. You guys are going to come through the program. And everybody is not going to be, when you get out, you think everybody ought to be just like, okay, man, nothing ever happened. And you know, maybe y'all wronged some people or did some people, you know, just did some bad stuff to some folks. You know, maybe stole from them or whatever. And I'm not stereotyping y'all. I just hear stories from guys, you know, because I sit and I talk with the guys through the years. And maybe you guys have done some of that. And you get out and you're in this place and you're like, man, God's forgiven me. And I'm awesome. And I know I'm his favorite, you know. But Brother Sid's wrong. That's the only thing he's wrong on. He's wrong on that. I'm number one. He's number two. But then all of a sudden they don't view you like that. They're like, no, man. You did this and you did this and you did this. And that will be opportunity for the enemy to come in and cause you to be offended with them. Because you're like, man, God's forgiven me and I've forgiven myself and you need to forgive me too. And some of them, it may take some time. So I just want to challenge all of you guys. Don't be offended if everybody doesn't come in and embrace you and say, man, you're awesome. I'm so proud for you. Some of them will even be standoffish saying, well, we'll see if it lasts. I'll be honest with y'all. I'm like that sometimes. I wrestle with that sometimes when people come in and they make a profession of faith in church. And I've got that kind of that Missouri mindset. Well, show me. We'll see in 6 months. And I don't want to be cynical. I don't want to be cynical. I don't want to be cynical when somebody comes in and they get on fire for God. And typically when somebody gets on fire for God, it doesn't last very long. And that's cynical in me just saying that. And that's speaking from a place where we've been hurt by pouring everything into somebody and them not wanting it or walking away or it being short-lived in their life. And that is just another form of offense. And so what we'll do, the next person that comes up, is we'll withhold a little bit. We won't pour everything into them. Right? We'll stop allowing God to use us as a vessel. We'll say, man, that didn't work out too good last time. I just kind of got got my trample, my feelings got trampled on and all that stuff. It'll make us quit hearing from the Lord and getting guys and going praying with them in the altar. That was awesome Sunday, brother. That rocked my world more than anything that happened. Sunday, I was just overwhelmed by the love of the Father. I told Lori, I said, man, it was just, in a good way, it was almost the love of the Father was almost suffocating in here. And I say that in a good way. I mean, it's like it sucked all the air out of the room. But other than that, what you did Sunday morning, I was just like, whoa, that's bad to the bone. That rocked my world. But if you allow yourselves to be offended with somebody, because if you keep doing that, you know what will happen? Somebody will hurt you. Man, you'll run out there and you'll want to pour into people and they'll be like, psh, and they'll tread it under their feet, just like they did Jesus. But if we become offended with it, you know what we'll do is we'll just shut down and we'll stop doing it altogether because we won't believe it's going to stick in people's lives. That's why it's crucial for us. That's why it's crucial for us to guard our hearts in a place of offense, to not let it come in, to not let it come in with individuals. A lot of times, you know what it is. It's family members that are sometimes the worst. Do you know Jesus' brothers didn't embrace the fact that he was the Messiah until after the resurrection? They didn't embrace it until after the resurrection. Man, that mess with you. Your mama's sitting here saying, that ain't your daddy's boy. Kind of like Joseph. So it's going to happen to us. The thing is how do we handle opportunity for offense? How do we handle opportunity for offense with individuals? I'll go ahead and tell you something, guys. Every once in a while, once every blue moon, I offend her. And she can do two things. She can either let it stick and it can become a problem in our marriage, or she can give no place to it. And let the Lord deal with me on it. And she keep loving me like it never happened. She probably doesn't know this, but every once in a while, used to, back before she became sanctified, she used to offend me on occasion. And I had the same choices. I have the same choices. I have the same choices. We'll become offended with people if they're not running at the same pace that we're running at. Because we'll be like, man, they need to get their act together. Instead of having mercy and grace and help coming alongside of them and helping carry them. It's just the way it happens with individuals. The way it happens with individuals. What time is it, Brett? 4:02? Yeah, hey. So we can hear. I should have gave it to Jeffrey. We can't.
Just from my own experience, it's as if offense, it gets you in such a weak place that's the enemy. He can get in at you better. And so you begin to believe the lies more. When you're not offended and you're not in that place, then those lies, they can't get to you. And so once his lies get to you, then all of a sudden other spirit, you know, you get a spirit of fear, you get a spirit of addiction, you get a spirit of lack that would have never come upon you had you not been offended in the first place. So a lot of times I've noticed anytime I'm dealing with an other spirit, I can trace it back to an offense. And so just eliminating that altogether, I feel like keeps us more in a place where the enemy can't get, he doesn't have as much track on us anymore when we stay unoffendable like that.
And that's the perfect lead into where the last place that I want to talk about, Joseph, and I won't turn there for time's sake. And perhaps we did it in reverse order. The person that perhaps Joseph could have been most easily offended with was God. Disappointment is the breeding ground for offense. Disappointment. Unmet expectations. Well, I got saved and I thought all this stuff was going to get cleaned up. How many times y'all seen somebody, man, they'll in a moment of genuine faith and genuine sincerity, they'll as best they can in that place, they'll give their heart to the Lord. But then in a few months, if it doesn't pan out like they think it should, they're like, man, this is bull crap. I don't see it happening. I don't see it working. Joseph was in servitude 13 years, but he never allowed himself to be offended with God. And when we are disappointed, the first person that we typically point our finger at, whether we acknowledge it or not, is God. When we face adversity, the first person that we point our finger at is typically God. And we become offended with Him. Usually, if you are offended at a people group, or if you're offended at an individual, it stems from a place of being offended with God. Exactly what you were talking about, Tiff. Because when I get offended with God, you know what it does? It opens up a place for offense from you to come into my life. It opens up place for me to get offended with people groups. People groups are not all, it's not all ethnic stuff, guys. You know what a challenge for Marty Smith, and I told this to Marty the other day, you know a challenge for Marty Smith is? Marty's down there ministering and is giving his heart to the poor people of Honduras. You know who he can be really easily offended with? Are the wealthy people of Honduras. Because there's wealthy people down there too. There's a mile, 2 miles from where we're staying in the city. And it's not as light, nice as Lenox, but it ain't far from it. All the people in the landfill that live off the landfill, there's some people with wealth that are they're making all that trash for them to sift through. And see, if Marty's not careful, he will become offended with them. But the way to him to guard his heart to keep from being offended with them is to not ever be offended with God. And when you become disappointed, it opens the door for offense with God. And we don't like to verbalize that because we're like, man, that's wrong for me to be offended with God. But we do. We pout and we withdraw. What did Adam do when he fell into sin? Adam in Genesis, not Adam, buddy. What did he do when he fell into sin? He hid from God. He withdrew from God. And if we're not careful, we'll say, God, you allowed this to happen into my, I know we're all deep spiritually and religious and all of that stuff, and we would never blame God for doing it, but we will blame Him for allowing it to happen. And we'll become offended with Him. We'll become offended for His timing. We'll become offended for the manifestation not happening quicker. I thought I'd be further along by now. I thought it'd happen quicker than this. And so we come in and we get offended with God. And when we get offended with God, it opens the doors up for everything else. So man, you know where all of this starts? And like I said, we kind of came in it from worked our way backwards on this, but you know where the root of it, where it all starts? Is do not allow yourself to be offended with God. Because when you come in the book of Romans chapter 8, it talks about all things work to good. To them that love the Lord and are called according to His purpose. All things work together for good. And He says, I know my thoughts towards you and I know my heart towards you. And I've cut covenant with you. And it took a few years for Rachel's womb to be opened. But when it was opened, it birthed Joseph and Benjamin. And a lot of times, we're in this instant mindset and this now mentality that our culture creates. And we try to make God a microwave God. And God's like, man, I'm in the slow burn on this. I'm in this for the slow burn. And so I want you to understand that it all originates with what's your heart and posture toward God. We'll have troubles in our marriage and we'll say, God, it's your fault because you should have gave me a better spouse. That's really where it... When God called out Adam and Eve in the garden, what was the first thing that Adam did? He said, God, besides hiding from Him after he hid from Him, what was his first communication with God? He said, God, it's this woman you gave me. So really, you know what he was saying? God, it's your fault. You should have gave me a stronger wife. Ain't none of us ever said that, have we? Should have gave me a better husband. But who are we really mad at? God. You should have gave me a better pastor. Some of y'all have been offended with God because of me. You should have gave me a better worship leader. You're offended with God because of Linda. Because she don't sing the songs that are your favorite songs. And so you get offended with God. We laugh, but it's true. We get, yeah. Aiden did one, or Kennedy did one day. Both of them, they got offended one day because they know the order that the songs are supposed to be played off the Victory album from Bethel. And we sang Ain't No Grave, but we didn't sing, what was the one that comes right, Raise a Hallelujah or something like that. And we didn't sing them like we were supposed to. And they look up at Lori and they're like, what, we ain't going to sing this. And Lori's like, no, not today. They just got their stuff and went to the nursery. I'm out then. They're not playing. That's true. That's a true story. That happened about a month ago. They ain't playing my songs. I'm out. And I'll go to the church down the road because they'll play my songs. And the same thing will happen there. Because when you get right down to the core of it, you're really just still really offended with God. Because I'll be honest with y'all. When I'm in proper alignment with God, I don't care who's on the stage. I don't care who's singing lead. I don't care who's playing drums. I don't care who's bringing the word. I don't care if it's James or Nick or Lisa or Lori or me or Brett House or whoever. I don't care. I'm not offended with God because I'm so wrapped up in me and Him. And I know we're out of time. Pulling all this together is the root of all of this is us allowing ourselves to be disappointed with God, therefore offended with God. So that's what we've got to guard against.
One thing is, God's not saying we're not hurt. It's okay to be hurt. He says, I will hold you through that hurt. In times in my life when people have hurt me, He said, I will allow you to hurt, but I won't allow you to wallow in it. You cannot hold on. This is not your identity. This is not going to name who you are. You are in me, and this is not who you are. He said, but I'll hold you through that hurt. And in that, we run back to God, and those walls come down that the enemy wants us to put up.
Something I just wanted to add was when he was talking to you guys over there, and it applies to all of us, but I think more so over here for the people who are going through this difficult time, the mind is the devil's playground. He will do everything that he can to keep you down and to keep you in that, well, I've done this or I've done that and I've done wrong and I've whatever's happened, all the negative stuff. And so he wants to keep you from fulfilling your full purpose. So when you look in the mirror, you might not be offended at somebody else. You might be offended at yourself. And you don't like who you see. And so when you get out and you're doing well and you're right in your faith and you're in proper alignment with the Lord and you think, well, my family is not going to believe this is who I am, or you know, whoever sees me, they know my past. You just have to dig in the Word and believe that you've left all that behind. That's not what He created you to be. He didn't want you to live in mediocrity. He wanted you to be able to come to a level of not being offended and to know that you are destined for greatness. And those doubts and the shame and the guilt that you feel is holding you back from reaching some other people and launching you to a whole nother level with Him.
Let's stand to our feet. We ran over a little bit tonight. I know our kids got school tomorrow. The altar is always open. Encourage you to come and take communion with him. When you just get to a place where you're desperately in love with him, then nothing else can really stick on you. Nothing else can really stick on you. I've always said when me and Lori first got married, we lived in a little 12 by 56 trailer. And legit, it was 12 by 56. And we had a dog that lived in the trailer with us. And Lori didn't know how to cook. And, you know, the doing clothes and all that was marginal. And I didn't care. I never got offended at cooking. I never got offended if there was all the clothes properly washed and this and this and this. I always make the joke I could step in, and not that it happened, but I could step in and step over a pile of dog poop and not even notice it because I was so glad to see her. And the key to guarding our heart is just falling madly in love with Jesus. And here's the thing, when I fall madly in love with Jesus, I fall madly in love with his family. And it's not just the people in here. It's his people. It's the other people in America that aren't like me. It's the other people around the world that aren't like me. But I fall in love with them because they're created in his image also. We think the only people created in his image are 35-year-old white Republicans. That couldn't be further from the truth. So, man, just press in and fall in love with him. Everything else take care of itself. Cindy, if you'll just start that up. Father God, we thank you for tonight. We thank you for the opportunity to just come to your house, to study your word, to worship you in this study. I thank you for the example of Joseph, what an awesome man he was, how he was a type of you and should be a type of us. And just let these words take hold in us and let us walk through this without offense in any area of life, in any area of life, Father, with any people or group of people, Father. Let's just be madly in love with you. We just exalt you and we lift you up. In Jesus' name we ask this. Amen. Amen.